This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Tony Cox. Michelle Martin is away. Coming up, We Need to Talk. That's the title of a documentary focused on the toughest conversations between mothers and their adolescent daughters, especially those in single-parent households. But first, as students return to school, we'll focus on the Obama administration's Race to the Top education competition. It's time for the winning states and the District of Columbia to put their plans to work. Each has won tens of millions, some hundreds of millions of dollars to implement innovative ideas that the government says will directly impact more than 13 million students and almost 1 million teachers. Here's President Obama.
Last year, we set aside more than $4 billion to improve our schools, one of the largest investments in reform in our nation's history. But we didn't just hand this money out to states that wanted it. We challenged them to compete for it. And it's the competitive nature of this initiative that we believe helps make it so effective. We laid out a few key criteria and said, if you meet these tests, we'll reward you by helping you reform your schools.
The key criteria Mr. Obama referred to includes better preparing students for college and jobs, building systems that track student growth, recruiting, training, and rewarding effective teachers and principals, and revamping the lowest performing schools. 46 total states plus the District of Columbia applied for phases 1 and 2 of the Race to the Top competition. In phase 1, Delaware and Tennessee received a combined $600 million. Now we are in phase 2 with 9 states and the district as the winners of nearly $3.4 billion to spend on improving their schools. Now that funds are coming, what exactly will be done with those billions, and will these programs really work? In a moment, we'll be joined by two people who have a strong interest in Race to the Top, Deborah Gist, the Department of Education Commissioner for Rhode Island, which is among the winning states, and Andy Ford, Vice President of the American Federation of Teachers Union and President of the Florida Education Association, Florida also one of the winners as well. But let's begin with journalist Degari Ahrens of Education Week magazine. He is here in our Washington, D.C. studios. Takari, nice to have you. It's Dakari, isn't
Dakari,
it?
Yes.
All right, I apologize for getting that wrong. Let's start with this. Were there common denominations, common denominators, let's say, in terms of the winning plans? Were teachers or teachers' unions especially significant in the decision-making?
Well, certainly there are a number of common denominators. As a result of the Race to the Top competition, over the past year, a number of states have changed their laws, for example, around teacher evaluation. Tennessee, which won in the first round, and other states, you know, such as Rhode Island, and have come and focused on, you know, adding student performance to how teachers are evaluated. Traditionally, teachers are evaluated based on an observation in the classroom, but there has been a push by the Obama administration and others to include student test scores and other items into how teachers are evaluated and making sure they are actually evaluated annually. And that's one of the things that we've seen.
In describing this, Dakari, is it a situation in which the states began to tailor their programs and their proposed programs to what they thought the federal government wanted, or was it a situation in which the federal government reached out across the country and said, okay, you're doing it right in Tennessee, you're doing it right in Delaware, we'll give you the money?
Well, the states absolutely went. They looked at the criteria. There's 500 points that were available, and the department put out a guideline that shows you each of the categories and how much it was worth. And states certainly went out. Governors, state education commissioners like Deborah Gist, who will be joining us later, went out immediately and said, hey, we need to change our laws. We want to be competitive for this money. And not only do we want to be competitive for this money, but we believe this is the right thing to do for our education system.
Now, one of the things that's been written about this so far is that the bulk of the states that received the money are all located east of the Mississippi. Coincidence or something more than that?
Well, the department would tell you it's a coincidence, and certainly there were a lot of people who looked at states such as Colorado and Louisiana, which both had changed a number of their laws, for example, around teacher evaluation and paying teachers in part based on their performance, and were concerned that those states were not selected. But Education Secretary Arne Duncan said, you know, I love what those states are doing, love what California was doing. Unfortunate that we weren't able to give them money, but we went according to the ranking. But there's a lot of people who are questioning why so many states along the East Coast received the
money. Got the money. Here's one state that got a hefty chunk of money, as reported from local news station WPRI.
Rhode Island is in. It means Rhode Island could get up to $75 million in federal money for education reforms. Also, among the winners, Massachusetts, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Maryland, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, and Washington, D.C.
Now let's bring in Rhode Island Education Commissioner Deborah Gist. Also with us, Andy Ford, a vice president of the union known as the American Federation of Teachers, who also heads up the Florida Education Association, Florida being one of the Race to the Top winners as well, reaping about $700 million for its education reform plans. Commissioner Andy, nice to have both of you.
Hi, Tony. Thank you.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Well, congratulations, I suppose, would be the first thing to say to the both of you. Commissioner, what do you think was the turning point, if there was such a thing, for your state in winning this money?
You know, we are so excited about this and really ready to put these funds to good use here in our state. And I think that for us, we felt really, really confident about our plan in both the first round and in the second round. But it was truly in that second round where everything came together for us. Our state really mobilized around not just this application, but really the plan itself. And I think the fact that we had Rhode Island Federation of Teachers and Health Professionals, which is the district that represents our biggest city, the union that represents the teachers in our biggest cities, was a big part of this. We had members of the business community and the nonprofit community and teachers and principals and superintendents. And I think it was really the way everyone came together which helped us to improve the quality of our proposal, but also really we were able to demonstrate that this was a statewide effort.
Andy Ford, I'm going to ask you in a moment about the union involvement because that's a key part of this. But before we do, I want to ask you this question because how does Race to the Top differ substantially and substantively from, let's say, No Child Left Behind?
Well, it moves us from a formula-driven program to a competitive grant process, which does change the whole landscape. And allows school districts and states to take a look at obtaining funds in a different way. So it's majorly different in terms of the way the funding is flowing.
Is there accountability that you will have, both of you, in terms of how the money is spent and how you would have to let the government know how you spent the money? Andy, you first on that.
We have to go through the grant process and make sure that the locals, when they bargain changes to the contract and implement the grant, that we're complying with the requirements of the federal government, and there's a monitoring program where each year you have to report what was accomplished with the funds.
Commissioner, is that the same for your state, or does the accountability differ from state to state?
Oh, no, it's certainly the same. I mean, I think what the U.S. Department of Education wants to see is whether or not each state is following the plan that they put into place, whether or not they're using the funds in the ways that they described that they would. And certainly we will be held accountable to that. And we've already begun conversations with the Department of Education to get all of that solidified.
What do you plan to do specifically with the money in Rhode Island?
Well, the funding in Rhode Island is going to we understand deeply that this is a one-time investment. And so we see this as our opportunity to move from the education system that we have today to the one we all envision. And our goal is nothing short of having the best public schools in the country. And so our investment, the primary area in which we're investing these funds is in professional development for our educators. And this includes obviously our teachers, but also school leaders and district leaders. And it's support for our educators in everything from engaging them deeply in the development of curriculum and the use of that curriculum, as well as a strong understanding of our standards and helping us to transition to the common state standards where all the states have come together around a set of standards. And also in the use of data and how to use information about how our students are doing to make sure that we're ensuring that every single child in our school is achieving at their greatest capacity.
That's one of the controversial issues in terms of providing or publicizing information about what is going on in the schools. And I want to follow that up with you, Andy. But before you answer that question, if I'm a parent in Florida, what am I going to see differently, and how soon am I going to see that difference with regard to how you are educating my child?
Well, I think some of the things that you'll see is that the fact the school moving from individual teachers with individual students to a team concept where you're taking a look at the delivery of instruction from a student's point of view and trying to revamp the whole curriculum to make sure that we're hitting on all the targets, because some of our goals within the Race to the Top are obviously focusing on our lowest performing schools. But our overall goal is to close the achievement gap between majority and minority students and reduce our dropout rate, as well as taking a look at the teacher evaluation system.
If I'm a teacher in Florida, am I worried about my job now as a result of this?
Well, you shouldn't be worried about your job as a result of this. Our economy is a different situation, and we do have some obstacles in terms of general funding of public schools in the state of Florida to deal with. But Race to the Top is a supplement to the state's budget for a specific purpose, and mainly it is focused on teacher evaluation systems and compensation.
Now, the AFT, your union, supported the evaluation system, as I understand it, while the NEA, the National Education Association, did not. Is that correct, Andy?
There are differences. Florida is a merged state, so we're affiliated with both the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers. And they do have differing opinions on subjects at times. But basically, the AFT embraced the concept of putting money behind something that we've tried to deal with for a very long time, and that's the teacher evaluation system, and trying to make it more data-driven and research-based in order to be able to identify teachers who are doing an outstanding job and to assist those who are not.
Dakari, we're going to talk more about this, but we're going to take a break first, and we'll continue our conversation about the Race to the Top education program in just a few moments. Our guests are Dakari Ahrens of Education Week, Andy Ford of the American Federation of Teachers, and Rhode Island Department of Elementary and Secondary Education Commissioner Deborah Gist. Stay with us on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Tony Cox. Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Tony Cox. Michelle Martin is away. Coming up, many Gulf Coast residents have returned to their old neighborhoods in the 5 years since Katrina, but a number of reports suggest that in New Orleans, programs aren't adequately supporting African Americans who also want to come home. More on that in a moment. But first, we continue now with our conversation about the Obama administration's Race to the Top education program. 46 states applied for this two-round competition, which offered over $4 billion in grants for school reform. We are in phase two of the competition now, where 9 states and the District of Columbia are winners. Education Week writer Dakari Ahrens joins us in our Washington, D.C. studios. We are also joined by Rhode Island Department of Education Commissioner Deborah Gist and American Federation of Teachers Vice President Andy Ford. Before the break, we want to talk about this teacher added evaluation. Dakari, it's been very controversial, particularly in California with the publication of the names of these school teachers. Is it as controversial elsewhere in the country?
Absolutely. The Los Angeles Times recently published a list of the what we would call the value-added scores of teachers. And what that means, rather than looking at the proficiency or how well students do each year, we're looking at the growth of students over time. And there's a lot of debate in the education policy community among researchers about the value of this information and whether it really tells us what we need to know about student performance and whether we can really measure individual teachers based on it.
Andy, I want to ask you about it, but by way of full disclosure, let me say now that my own daughter is a school teacher in the LA Unified School District who was one of those people whose effectiveness was rated and published. She did well, so I was happy for that. But yet, it is something that people in California and elsewhere are talking about. As a union, Andy, where do you stand on this?
Well, I think we're taking part of the decision-making process about teacher evaluations, and we're publishing only part of the answer. It's not an overall comparison. And then you even have the people who have developed some of these formulas questioning whether the data could be actually used for the purpose that we're trying to use it for. I think a better approach would be to actually develop an evaluation instrument that you knew was effective and that was research-based and that the results were reliable. Because everything I've seen about what took place in Los Angeles, there's questions on whether the data was actually even reliable.
Commissioner Guest, two points are raised here in terms of what we're talking about. One is the efficacy of the evaluation itself, whether it is complete or not complete. And secondly, whether or not that information should be made public and who is entitled to know what that information is. What's your view on it, and how does your school system operate with regard to this?
Well, first of all, in order to use a value-added model, you have to have good data and you have to have a strong model. And so we actually are exploring right now whether or not, and if so, how we will use that kind of information, whether it's value added or what's called a growth model or some sort of way for us to be able to take a look at information that we have around student performance on our standardized test scores. But what I think is really important is that this is just one piece of information, and it is one piece of information that should be a part of an evaluation that is comprehensive. And what we're doing in our state right now is developing an overall system that is primarily intended to help our educators grow and develop as professionals. That's the purpose of it. And we have over 100 educators. They've been working all summer long on our evaluation system. And we're working very, very closely with our teachers and our teachers' union, with the Rhode Island, our affiliate of the AFT in particular, have been deeply, deeply involved in this work.
My final question is this, and a brief answer from all three of you would be very much appreciated. Is it your sense that we are moving into a new era in which teachers can and should expect to be evaluated and to have that evaluation made public in one form or another? Dakar, you first.
I think that remains to be seen, but after the publication of this information by the LA Times, there certainly has been a lot of interest, I know, among other education reporters in the country in finding out this type of information, and I know that many researchers have wanted access to this kind of information to really study whether teachers are effective.
Commissioner Gist.
Well, that's a two-part question. I would say that with evaluation, absolutely, because our educators deserve to have good information that helps them to grow and develop as professionals. In terms of making that information public, I think that's a much more complicated question, and I think it has to be handled very, very carefully. And I'm not comfortable with sort of this broad, let's just publish this test score data. But we do need to make sure that families have information about the quality of their schools.
Andy Ford, the last word to you.
I think everybody needs to be concerned about making sure that the teacher that's in the classroom is as effective as you can find. But the overuse and reliance on test scores has some negative consequences that I hope everybody would pay attention to. It does cause you to narrow the curriculum and to teach to the test. A full comprehensive evaluation that involved multiple measures, I think, would be a better service to the public.
Dakari Ahrens is a writer for Education Week. He joined us here in our Washington studios. We also heard from Andy Ford. He is the vice president of the American Federation of Teachers and the president of the Florida Education Association. He joined us from member station WFSU in Tallahassee. We also spoke with Deborah Gist, Rhode Island Department of Elementary and Secondary Education commissioner. She was with us from member station WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island. The three of you, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.